Vayomer Hashem el Avram, Lech lecha me'artzecha, umi moladetecha, umi beit avicha, el ha'aretz asher areka. Hashem said to Avram, his name hadn't been changed yet, go for yourself from your land, from your relatives, and from your father's house, to the land that I will show you. Ve'e'esecha le'gai gadol va'avarechecha va'agadla shemecha ve'ye biracha. And I will make you a great nation, I will bless you, and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. Shalom, and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Lech Lecha. Parshat Lech Lecha has a nickname of sorts. It's known as Shabbat Aliyah, for obvious reasons, and I will not leave them unsaid. We'll get there in a few moments. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the sixth day of Mar Cheshvan, 5774, corresponding to October 10th. This week, as I am sure everyone in the Jewish world knows, the big event was the passing of Rav Avadya Yosef Zatzal, a Torah giant, a leader for many, many years of Sephardi Jewry, Edot Mizrach as they're known here, and of world Jewry, or universal Jewry, an accomplished author of many, many Sfarim, well known as a posek, a decisor of halacha, and at the same time that he was a fierce proponent of the Sephardi community, he also hoped and worked towards a more unified community, albeit in the image of the Sfardim, but we won't get into that now. He felt that all of the differences between different traditions sort of split the people apart rather than unite them. I have my own feelings about that, but again, this is not the time for that. But it was a significant event here in Israel. The funeral was the largest ever in the 65 years of statehood. They estimated something like 800,000 people. A lot of people. And I just want to share an anecdote, not mine personally, but somebody that I know. And I heard this many years ago, and I confirmed it just last night. A doctor, I won't even pin it down by telling you which kind of doctor, but was a prominent doctor in New York who operated on many religious personalities in addition to everyone else in his practice. And he performed an operation on the son of Rav Avadya Yosef, Rav David Yosef. This is a number of years ago. And in the middle of the operation, the phone in the operating room rings, and it is Rav Avadya Yosef calling to find out about his son. This doctor takes the phone and says, basically, you have two choices. You can find out how your son is doing, or you could let me finish doing it. So, with a smile, he hung up the phone, went back to the operation, spoke to Rav Avadya Yosef after, and reported that the operation was successful. Rav Avadya Yosef gave him a big bracha, a blessing, and said, among other things, that may God send an angel to be at your side whenever you operate. So this doctor, not without a sense of humor, says, with all due respect, I operated once on a great Hasidic Rebbe, and he blessed me, that I should have three angels with me at all times. To which Rav Avadya Yosef, without a moment's hesitation, replied, and you could see the twinkle in his eye and the tongue in his cheek, replied, one Sfardi Malach is equal to three Ashkenazi Malachim. One Sfardi angel, three Ashkenazi angels. I mentioned that rather than give you example of his Torah scholarship, because that's well known, but the fact that he had a sense of humor might be less so, and to me it enhances the memory of the person. Okay, let's say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130, and then we'll talk about Lech Lecha, not only from the perspective of 3,000 plus years ago, but of today as well. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Imavono tishmorya Adonai miya amod. Ki imacha hasalicha l'ma'an tivare. Ki vi ti Adonai kivata nafshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim la'boker, shomerim la'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai, ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanatunim batzara v'ashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara l'irvacha u'me'afela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amen. Before we get into Parshat Lech Lecha, excuse me, I want to mention something on the calendar coming up. Today, I said, was 6th of Mar Cheshvan. Tonight in Israel, we start asking for rain with the words V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. I would like to speak about that a little bit later as well. But next Tuesday is the 11th of Mar Cheshvan, October 15th this year, and that is the traditional Yahrzeit of Rachel Imenu. Happens to be the birthday of Binyamin, the son of Yaakov and Rachel, but more famously it is thought of and treated as the anniversary of the death of Rachel Imenu. The famous prophecy to Rachel, sort of, in the book of Yirmiyahu, which is the Haftarah of the second day of Rosh Hashanah, contains the famous Rachel, a voice is heard on high, Rachel is crying for her children who have been exiled from the land, and God, through the prophet, assures her that there will be reward for her deeds, Vishavu vanim ligvulam, and her children will return to their boundaries. This specific time, it is being used as a worldwide campaign to pray for the release of Jonathan Pollard, one of Rachel's descendants, one who has been not only in exile but in prison for far, far, far too many years, and an unbelievable stubbornness on the part of the United States government. It has kept him in jail way beyond anyone else in a similar or even a worse kind of situation. And as I said, there's a worldwide campaign for prayers on behalf of Jonathan Pollard for his release. I would suggest, if anyone is interested in boning up on some of the details, and you read it, and it's just unbelievable how raw deal this man, this Jew, was handed by the United States government, and I'm sure that Israel is not as blameless as they would like to declare, but I recommend www.jonathanpollard.org. And you will see a fact sheet there of different dates and pieces of information. And you will not necessarily find that prayer there, but that you can find on www.ezratnashim, EZRATNASHIM, one long word, .co.il. And the target date is this Tuesday, but any day of the year will work for prayer, which again we'll talk about more later. Now, at the beginning of the show, besides the opening music, which I am leaving for you to decipher, I read the first two verses. Usually I read just the first one. And I read you the Art Scroll Stone Edition Chumash translation, which is a rendering, not exactly literal. God spoke to, or said to Avram, "Go from your land, from your birthplace, and from your father's home to a land which I will show you. And there you will become a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you will become a blessing." And it continues in the third verse, Va'avorecha. Va'avorecha mivorachecha. I will bless those who bless you, and him who curses you I will curse, and all the families of the earth shall bless themselves by you. So it's not just Avraham that's getting the brachot, it's all of his descendants and all the nations of the world. Avraham, when he gets the extra letter to his name, is known as the Av Hamon Goyim, the father of many nations. But we see him specifically as one of our forefathers. The Muslims see him as one of their forefathers, and the difference between us begins in the next generation with Yitzchak as opposed to Yishmael, and continues with Yaakov as opposed to Esav. But that's a whole other thing. Now, it might seem simple to say, and maybe I am oversimplifying, but certainly not trivializing the issue. When you read in the Torah that God said to Avram, go to Eretz Yisrael, go live in the land of Israel, and that's where you will be blessed, and that's the land that I am giving you, and that's where your descendants will be and should be, then the question is, how do Jews in other countries of the world, outside of Israel, United States, Canada, Mexico, England, France, etc., etc., how do those Jews, when they hear God speaking to Avraham and telling him, Lech Lecha, do they, I don't know, should they, absolutely yes, internalize and personalize that message as if God is speaking directly to each individual Jew? If the Torah tells us, Vayomer Hashem el Avram Lech Lecha, then it must mean that he is saying this to each and every descendant of Avraham Avinu, through Yitzchak, through Yaakov, to every member of the Jewish people, Lech Lecha, go from your land, from your birthplace, from your parents' home, and go to the land. In Avraham's case, it was yet unknown what his destination was and would mean. We know it as Eretz Yisrael. And God is speaking to every single Jew and telling him, go to the land. I know this because the Torah does not tell us everything. It only tells us those things which are meant to be messages and lessons for each of us. I often point to, which I did in the lead tidbit this week in the hard copy of Torah Tidbits, it was called the 13-year gap. There is a pair of verses, one of which tells us that Avraham was 86 years old when Yishmael was born. The very next pasuk says, and came to pass that Avraham was 99 years old. That's 13 years, which the Torah does not tell us a thing. Well, what happened during those 13 years? I have no idea, because the Torah doesn't tell us. I could imagine Avraham and Sarah getting up in the morning and having breakfast and doing their thing and taking care of all other kind of things. The point is that nothing noteworthy happened during those 13 years. God, whatever he communicated to Avraham, if he did, was for Avraham only. And only that which the Torah spells out for us is meant to be a message for us. So if the Torah says, Bereshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, then I, as a believing Jew and a believing person and a Bible-believing person, say God created the world. And if it says that God said to Avram, my patriarch, Lech lecha me'artzecha mimolaretecha u'mibeit avicha, then that becomes an imperative for me. And, thank God, 32 years and a little bit more ago, I heeded God's words of Lech lecha me'artzecha mimolaretecha u'mibeit avicha. I heeded his words of V'yirishtem et ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba, dwell in the land. And Baruch Hashem, I'll tell you what happened to me 3 hours ago. I was walking, delivering Torah tidbits through the streets of Yerushalayim, and I started to smile. I looked around and I saw buildings and I saw trees and not too much traffic and not too much noise, and it was a very pastoral setting. And I smiled with a grin ear to ear, and I said, I am a Yerushalmi. I live in Jerusalem. I live in the land of Israel. And I am not sitting on my hands. I am active in attempting to encourage others to live in Israel and others to keep the Torah. And I've dedicated my life to that. But it's a wonderful feeling to realize that when you get up in the morning, you get up in the morning in Eretz Yisrael. And when you daven and have breakfast and get on a bus, it's taking place in the land that God promised to Avraham and his descendants that they would have this land. I don't know if I'm overdoing it, but on that note, I will ask you to listen to a track from an album that's really a great Aliyah encourager. It's called Eretz HaTzvi Mishirei Artzenu HaKadosha, from the Songs of Our Holy Land. The first track is Lizaracha Natati. This is based on various psukim, including psukim from this week's Sedra of Lech Lecha. And may it go from the page of the Torah via this song into your ears, into your hearts, into your souls, and into action.
נתתי את הארץ הזאת ביום ההוא קראת השם את אברהם ברית לאמור לזרעך נתתי את הארץ הזאת הלך בארץ לאורכה ולרוחבה כי בך לך אתננה ולזרעך עד עולם הלך בארץ את הארץ הזאת לזרעך נתתי את הארץ הזאת לזרעך נתתי את הארץ הזאת לזרעך
ביום ההוא קראת השם את אברהם ברית לאמור לזרעך נתתי נתתי את הארץ הזו ביום ההוא קראת השם את אברהם ברית לאמור לזרעך נתתי נתתי את הארץ הזו הלך בארץ לאורכה ולרוחבה
listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Lech Lecha. I just had a little fun by piecing together three tiny, or not so tiny, pieces, and I need a one-word reason for starting the second half of the show with the way that I did. Any answers for either piece of music or both, excuse me, write to tt@ou.org, and love to hear you from you, and I will acknowledge on next week's show, Amir Tzashem. Okay, so that's Lech Lecha, and that's Shabbat Aliyah, and that is the simple but strong feeling that those of us who have come on Aliyah, and as I mentioned, 32 years plus, haven't regretted a second, and raised my children here, and now participating in the raising of my grandchildren. And that's the story. Before we get back into Lech Lecha, if we do, I want to talk a little bit about rain. Oh, that's what I should have had. Raindrops keep falling on your head. Okay, I'll keep that in mind the next time rain is an appropriate topic. It goes like this. There is a Mishnah in the beginning of Masechet Ta'anit that asks, when do we start mentioning God's power as the rainmaker? And the conclusion, even though there's a dispute and a discussion, the conclusion is from the last day of Sukkot, which means really the day after Sukkot, the holiday which we call Shmini Atzeret, the one that here is also called Simchat Torah. That's when we say Tfilat Geshem, prayer for rain, and that's when we begin describing God, among many other powers, in the second blessing of the Amidah, as the Mashiv HaRuach, the one who causes the wind to blow, Umorid HaGeshem, and the rain to fall. Then, in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, 2 weeks later, to the day, actually 15 days, we begin to say, V'tein tal umatar livracha, we begin to ask for rainfall. Outside of Israel, the rule for the beginning of the petition for rain is different. It follows, even though it's very anachronistic, it follows the need for rain in Babylonia, Babel, which today is in part of Iraq and Iran. And they, based on the Mishnah statement, Ein Shalim Geshamim Ela Samachul Geshamim, you don't ask for rain except when it's close to the rainy season, to the rains coming. In that part of the world, it was considered 2 months after the autumnal equinox, known in Hebrew as Tekufat Tishrei, that they were to begin asking for rain. And that became the standardized practice around the world for when to ask for rainfall outside of Eretz Yisrael. So, in the United States and elsewhere, it is December 4th or 5th, that's the beginning of the insertion of the words Talu Matar to the Bracha, V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, unlike Mashiv HaRuach, which is in every single Amidah which we say, V'tein Talu Matar Livracha, belongs to a Bracha of request, which is only in the weekday Amidah. Nonetheless, tonight, I say tonight based on when I'm recording this, in two and a half hours or so, we will start with Ma'ariv time, and at Ma'ariv, right before the Amidah, someone will bang his hand on the table, and probably more than one person, and say the words Talu Matar, and that signals to us, although even if we don't hear that announcement, we still have to do it, of starting to say V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. There is a reason, which I won't go into now, as to why we wait 2 weeks after Tfilat Geshem on Shemini Atzeret, but we do. And the Mishnah is the one that fixes it, at Rabban Gamliel's opinion, 7th of Mar Cheshvan. As I said, it was the Babylonian community that took the Mishnah as to what it said about Samuch L'Geshamim and fixed it at 2 months after the beginning of the fall. And then that got readjusted when the Julian calendar was ditched in favor of the Gregorian calendar in the United States. Actually, it wasn't the United States, but in the 13 colonies and in the entire British Empire. The switch was made in the year 1752, and if you go onto the internet, you can see a strange-looking calendar of September, or is it October? I don't remember offhand. In that year, it was a very short month because 11 days were thrown out in order to bring the new calendar, the Gregorian calendar, into synchronization with the actual cycle of the earth around the sun, which is called the year. The previous system, which approximated the length of time it took the earth to go around the sun, at 365 and a quarter days, and therefore the rule was easy, every 4 years is a leap year. If the year is divisible by four, it's got an extra day in February. If it's not, it doesn't. That needed to be adjusted, and the Gregorian calendar makes that adjustment. Again, no further details now, but that pushed the starting date in Chutz La'aretz for the beginning of December. Now, instead of, or I really can't give a full coverage of this topic, and especially with a lot of people from Chutz La'aretz listening, it really doesn't make sense to do it now because this is only germane in Israel, although there is the overlap in the form of visitors to this country who happen to be here this week and will be confronted with the situation of knowing that they don't start until December 4th or 5th. But in Israel, they start on the 7th of Mar Cheshvan, which is tonight, and they are here, but they're going back on next Tuesday. So what do they do when they daven tonight? So the original guideline was a person from outside of Israel, in Israel, does not take on the Israeli practice of beginning to ask for rain from the 7th of Mar Cheshvan unless he plans on being here for at least a year. Does not have to be a commitment to live here forever, although that's not a bad idea. He's going to be here for the year. Then he says Talu Matar based on our Israeli schedule. If he's only here for a visit, then will not be staying here for a year. The original psak was he does like the place he comes from, and the only clash that would be is if he's called to be the chazan, the shliach tzibur, the leader of the service, in which case he can't do what he would have done if he were still in the States. He must do according to the custom here and say v'tein talu matar livracha. Therefore, there was the recommendation of avoiding being the chazan during a weekday, during this situation, shacharit et mincha, ma'ariv, you don't have to worry because there is no repetition. So he doesn't have to say his piece out loud. And if he can't avoid it or it's not desirable to avoid it, then he knows that he has to conform in his repetition of the Amidah that's said out loud. He has to conform with Eretz Yisrael, and vice versa for an Israeli visiting in the States at this time of year. If he's not going to be staying abroad for more than a year, then he begins to say Talu Matar tonight, even though his shul and his community where he's visiting will not be saying it till the beginning of December. And again, if he's called to be the Shliach Tzibur, he either declines or he has to conform in the out loud repetition of the Amidah according to the custom of the place he finds himself in. The complication comes from many students who come either used to be in their junior year of college, now it's post-high school, yeshiva, seminary, university, and they find themselves in Israel for many, many months, not usually a whole year, but many, many months, and they need to know what they should do. The difficulty in that is that they get different answers depending on who they ask. They ask the rabbi from the shul where they came from, in Baltimore, Maryland, or in Philadelphia, New York, whatever. They'll be told one thing, and if they speak to people here, they might get a different answer. A very common situation here is they continue from the 7th of Mar Cheshvan tonight until the beginning of December to say v'tein bracha as if they're still back in wherever they came from, but in Shema Kolenu, in that blessing of the Amidah, that's where they say v'tein talu matar livracha. Now, again, I'm leaving out lots of details. Maybe I'll give you a tiny, really picky detail in order to drive a more important point across. But before that, a major, I don't know what to say here, a major theme of Judaism, a major premise of Judaism, a major belief, a major foundation, is that prayer is important and that prayer counts and that prayer is real. Because otherwise, we would not be able to handle some of these halachic guidelines. For example, it's now tonight, Thursday night, the eve of the 7th of Mar Cheshvan, and a person is davening the Amidah, either in shul or privately, and he neglects to add Talu Matar. When he finishes the Amidah, he realizes his omission, and what does he do? Well, not saying v'tein talu matar livracha, in an Amidah from Zayin Mar Cheshvan until Pesach invalidates the Amidah. So he has to say it again. Now what he's saying again is 19 brachot, 19 blessings, all of which have been deemed invalid because one of them did not contain the request for dew and rain as a blessing, and that invalidates the entire Amidah. Amazing thing if you think about it. Because you might say, all right, you know what? Make sure you remember next time. What's one person's prayer with all the other people that are davening around the world? And the answer is, every single person's prayer counts. This is especially astonishing when you realize what a person who makes that mistake said instead of what he was supposed to. He said, V'tein bracha al pnei ha'adamah. Give a blessing on the face of the earth. That's not bad. But he was supposed to say, V'tein tal umatar livracha, give beneficial rain. He didn't. We say prayer is real. That's what you were supposed to be asking for. And you have hereby invalidated 19 blessings, and you have to start all over again with the Amidah. If prayer is not real, that's a silly thing to do. But we believe that prayer is real. We do not know how many drops of rain correspond to each time a Jew says, V'tein tal umatar livracha. But we believe in prayer and in the efficacy of prayer. And we believe that we all have a responsibility for each other, a communal responsibility to ask God for rain during that season and period of the year when we really want it to rain. Now, I really hope that I'm not confusing anyone. If you're listening to this and you live outside of the land of Israel and you're not here visiting, then you have no question. You continue saying in that bracha of the Amidah V'tein bracha until the beginning of December, and I will try to remind you, or you will be told otherwise and reminded to say V'tein tal umatar from that point. But it doesn't matter which point you begin. That's a technicality of the halacha. What is important is that we take rain seriously, and a lot of other things go into that as well. And that includes the four species of Sukkot, and Nisuch HaMayim in the time of the Beit HaMikdash on Sukkot, and Hoshana Rabbah, and Klapping Hoshanot, all from Sukkot, and then Tfilat Geshem. And every single day, three times a day, we refer to God as the Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGeshem, with an implied petition to God that it should rain beneficial rain. That's very important also. The month of Mar Cheshvan is the month the Torah describes as that when the flood took place. And that's when the land finally dried after a full calendar year. So we recognize that rainfall, water, is a tricky thing because not enough water is not good. Too much water is not good. We need it just right and in the proper time and in the proper intensity in order to benefit from it. So it's very important that we realize that we're not just asking for rain, because hurricanes have rain also. We're asking for rain livracha, as a blessing. And that's what we all have a responsibility for. In modern times, the situation is less frantic than it was in olden times. In other words, we have water storage and desalinization, and I'm not saying that it's nice to have drought, and it's nice to see the Kinneret level go further below the optimal line, and even the red line sometimes. That's not good. But we are not completely yielded to the whims of the weather that we once were. But don't mistake the situation to think that it doesn't matter what it does, because it matters very much. And when we talk about rainfall worldwide, we're talking about droughts in some places and monsoons in other places and tornadoes and hurricanes and mild weather and serious weather and severe weather and snow, etc., etc. So it's a complex situation, but if you believe in God and you believe that He created this world and believe that He maintains an active role in the way the world functions, then it is very, very worthy and appropriate to pray to Him at the proper times for beneficial rainfall. All right, we're down to about 2.5 minutes of the show left. Let's talk about Brit Milah, circumcision, the topic at the end of the Parsha, a very significant mitzvah for the Jewish people, a situation that keeps popping up with countries that want to ban not only ritual slaughter but circumcision, and controversies as to whether it has health benefits or it's mutilation of the body, and people kvetch about it and people praise it. And the bottom line for us is God commanded Avraham and all of his descendants, we, the Jewish people, to circumcise our sons at eight days old, and if not then, as soon as possible thereafter. And if a child goes into adulthood without having been circumcised, it's a serious situation, which he could rectify by having himself circumcised. And it's a very, very important thing, so important that a person, a baby, who dies before circumcision is circumcised before he's buried. It's a sad situation, but it shows you one of the things about Brit Milah. Most significant, in my opinion, is an offshoot of the fact that at a Brit Milah, there are two blessings, not just one, of mitzvah. Not discussing the Shechianu issue, which we in Eretz Yisrael say, and Chutz La'aretz many Ashkenazim don't. I'm talking about the two brachot of mitzvah. One is Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav tzivanu al hamila, on the circumcision. That is a relatively short couple of seconds job done by the professional mohel. He makes the bracha, he takes the knife, gives it to the father, who gives it to him as his agent, and he does the work, and that's done and finished. But the job is not finished. The second blessing, followed immediately by the father reciting Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav tzivanu, Lahachniso bevrito shel Avraham Avinu, to enter this child into the covenant of Abraham, is a lifelong commitment to raise the child as a good person and a good Jew. And that is the total story. There's Mila, and there's covenant with God, Brit Mila, Brit Mila. Okay, that's interesting. I don't know how to count. I thought I had about 2.5 minutes left. I had 2 more minutes. So I finished quickly. So now let me just elaborate a little bit on that. Rarely do we have a mitzvah where we recite two brachot. We have sometimes an introductory paragraph that warms us up to the mitzvah, but the actual birchot hamitzvah is one, Asher Kiddishanu b'mitzvotav tzivanu, that God sanctifies us with his mitzvot and commanded us on such and such, to eat matzah, to dwell in the sukkah, to hear the shofar, whatever. In Brit Milah, there is an implied two layers to the mitzvah. And that's why it's in Parshat Lech Lecha, this week's reading, that we point to understand the significance of Brit Milah, and not the other place in the Torah where we see it commanded, namely in Parshat Tazria. There it's very clinical. It's God spoke to Moshe saying, speak to the people of Israel and tell them when a woman becomes pregnant and she gives birth to a male child, there's a ritual impurity for a certain period of time, and on the 8th day the boy should be circumcised, and that's it. It doesn't say there anything about what that signifies. It is a mitzvah on its own. But it's a mitzvah that comes along because it is not just a mitzvah, it is a symbol of the commitment between God and the Jew, and this I include women in also, even though they don't get circumcised, but based on the ideal situation of a man and a woman uniting and becoming one, meaning becoming a married couple and the parents of their children, involves the organ which Brit Mila is performed with, and it's something that really belongs to both, again, without going into too much detail. On that note, I will say Shabbat Shalom, Lehishtameah.